Every day as a landlord introduces new experiences and new challenges that we have never encountered before. There are incredibly difficult decisions that often have to be made, and sometimes we're just not quite sure what to do with the current situation that we find ourselves in. In today's podcast, we'll explore a serious issue with a tenant living in your rental that has never applied to live at your property. It is an issue that landlords encounter much more often than you may think, and you may have to deal with it yourself one day. I'll discuss a few of the scenarios which may play out, including ones that I have personally had to deal with. Stay tuned, and we'll get started in just a minute. Hi everybody, my name is Chris, and I want to thank you for joining us for another value-packed Tenant Cloud podcast. If you want to be a more informed, better educated, and successful landlord, then stay tuned. With over a decade of property management experience, we bring you short and sweet, bite-sized pieces of incredibly valuable property management tidbits in 15 minutes or less. So the question that we're going to deal with today is, what do I do if I have a tenant who I think used someone else's identity to get approved? If it is a cut and dry situation of theft of identity, it's often a relatively easy resolution once you have discovered the discrepancies and you're able to provide the authorities with the evidence. Now, to be clear, what we're talking about here is you rented out a unit to someone who you believed that you were renting to, that individual. And in some cases, maybe you never actually met that person to begin with. And that may actually be one of the things that might be the first issues. But you rented out to somebody, and you come to find out, whether it's a week later, a month later, or even 6-8 months later, that the person that is living at your rental is not the person that you signed the lease with. And it could be that the person who rented out your rental is a friend or a relative of the person who's actually living there now. Or maybe it is someone they sublet out to without your permission. Or maybe it is the person who applied for the rental used a stolen identity, and they are renting the unit under someone else's social security number, somebody else's date of birth, somebody else's driver's license, and so on and so forth. And so that's what we're talking about here is the very first thing. Is if it is a cut and dry theft of identity situation, that one is, believe it or not, more often easier to resolve than the other scenarios which I brought up. So if you actually have the evidence, if you know that the person who is living there is not the person who the identity is tied to, the social security number, the date of birth, the name, all that good stuff, and you can provide that information to the police, many landlords have actually been able to resolve this issue relatively quickly simply by calling the police, contacting their fraud department, and then the police do a quick investigation a lot of times, and turns out that social security number belongs to somebody who's dead, so clearly that's not the person in your rental, and so on and so forth. So you can actually resolve that issue pretty quickly in those situations, depending on the police department, of course, and where you're at and how motivated they are to resolve that issue, or if they even have a fraud department like that that handles stuff like that, which most of them do. And a lot of times they will simply just go to the property and arrest the individual and remove them from your rental property. That's the best case scenario if that were to ever happen to you. Does it always happen like that? Absolutely not. But of the few scenarios that I brought up in how this could play out a little bit ago, that is the one that typically gets resolved the quickest. And you can take possession back of your property, because the reason for that is it's at that point, it's not a civil issue. It is a criminal issue. It's somebody who stole identity. They're fraudulently living inside of the apartment under an assumed identity. That entire thing is a criminal activity. That's a criminal act. It's not a civil act. Scenario two is not so cut and dry, because what do I mean by that? This becomes a civil issue when it is a friend or a relative of the person living at the rental, because they can simply say that their friend or relative let them stay there, or they're just visiting, or they're house sitting while they're gone, and so on and so forth. There's 100 stories that they can come up with. And if that happens and you try to call the police and the police show up and ask the person, hey, who are you? Are you supposed to be here? And they give them that story, the police department is just going to turn to you and say, I mean, this is a civil issue. You're going to have to take this up with the lease, with the court system, because as far as we're concerned, there's no criminal act here. And in those scenarios, it's typically a lot harder to get that resolved because now you have to go through the courts. Now you have to serve the correct eviction notice. You have to file in court. You have to go through whatever that process is in your area. In our area, the court hearings are typically 3 weeks out, sometimes longer. And so you're talking about a month's long process that is going to be drawn out. And if they appeal, then there's that whole issue. And it can just become this nightmare of a situation, especially if you have a situation where the person who is living there is doing things out of the rental that they should not be doing. What do I mean by that? I had a situation where I had a tenant who was, well, he wasn't a tenant, actually. He became a tenant in the sense that he was living there illegally, but I had a tenant who ended up having to call 911 and going to the hospital. He had some underlying health issues. And when he was taken to the hospital, he gave somebody who he, one of the only people that I think he knew, he wasn't too close with his family. He was a little bit elderly. And I think it was somebody who had taken advantage of him, but he gave the keys to him and asked him to keep an eye on his place and feed his cat and all that good stuff. Well, that person that he that had befriended him and that he gave his keys to turns out was a drug dealer. And the drug dealer ended up taking over his apartment and used it as one of his distribution places. And while we knew that, as the property management, because we were there on the property pretty often. It was a smaller property, probably about 30, 40 units. And while I knew what was going on and I could see the activities taking place and I could see the foot traffic and I could see what was going on, it wasn't my first rodeo with this type of thing. When I figured out that it wasn't the actual tenant there anymore, that the actual tenant was in the hospital, and found out who was in the actual unit, I tried reaching out to the tenant. As it turns out, he was actually at that point on his deathbed. And that was something that I don't think he had even knew before getting in the ambulance and going to the hospital. And so now I had this situation where I have this person living in this rental with a 6-8 months left on the lease. The rent is on auto pay, so it's getting paid. I believe this particular tenant was actually also on some type of subsidy of some type. And so that money was getting paid on a regular basis because he's alive and they're covering their portion of his rent. And his portion is on auto pay. And so everything's getting paid. There's nothing wrong with the lease. There's nothing wrong with the actual tenant. The only thing wrong in this situation is that he gave his keys to somebody to watch his place, and that person turned out to be someone who decided to conduct illegal criminal activity out of the rental. So in an effort to resolve it, we contacted the police and the police came out, and that is the exact scenario that played out. We told them this guy is dealing drugs. He is doing all this stuff out of this rental property. We've seen it, so on and so forth. And the police basically told us when they knocked on the door, the guy answered the door and he knew the name of the tenant. He said, yeah, so-and-so told me to watch his place for him. And so I'm just here a few days out of the week, just keeping an eye on things for him, feeding his cat, all that good stuff. And so the police basically after that encounter came to me and said, hey, we haven't seen any evidence of illegal activity. And until a sworn officer sees it happening, your word that it's happening is not good enough. And this guy knows the name of the tenant. He told him he has the keys. He showed us the keys to the rental and he told us that he has access to this rental. And so it is a civil issue and you're going to have to resolve this through the courts. This is not going to be a criminal issue. And unfortunately, there is nothing we can do about it. We can't remove him from the property. You cannot change locks because he can actually request access to the rental. If you have changed the locks and he brings you the keys, then that don't work on the door anymore, he's going to be able to request access to that unit. Or even if he breaks the window, which we had actually tried that first before we even called the police, we knew when he was gone from the rental, so we changed the locks on the doors. And because we had sent a notice to the to the tenant that we were going to be changing the locks about 24 hours in advance because there was activity taking place at the rental that didn't seem right. And the tenant, of course, responded and said, yeah, that's fine. I didn't realize he was going to be doing that with my apartment, all that good stuff. And that was a few days prior to us ever calling the police. And that was actually shortly after he had ended up in the hospital. And so we had done that, and the tenant ended up breaking the window on the door, and he ended up changing the locks himself, and he ended up changing the locks, so he then had the keys for the rental. And so he showed the police both. He actually told the police that entire story, that we had locked him out, that he had to break in to get back access to the unit, and then he showed them both keys and just told them the whole story, and the police were like, there's nothing we can do about this. So as you can imagine, as a landlord at that point, that is a pretty nightmare situation. You have 30 to 40 other tenants that are all law-abiding citizens. They're paying rent, doing all this stuff, and you have this person come out of nowhere who befriended this guy who was elderly and sick, ends up in the hospital on his deathbed, and now this person is continuing to use his apartment rent-free for illegal activities, and there's not a thing you can do about it except for file an eviction on the person who is on their deathbed. That was not a pleasant situation. That was not a pleasant scenario. So we actually ended up having to proceed with that process. And sadly, the tenant ended up passing away prior to that eviction process playing out. And the caseworker was able to send us the documentation we needed to close that lease out and take possession of the unit a few weeks later because the individual had been deceased. And so the lease at that point was null and void. We were able to thankfully get a hold of some family members, and get everything resolved at that point. So it's a very difficult situation to deal with, and there's 100 ways it can play out once it becomes a civil issue. So the best way to deal with this is to not let it happen in the first place. And so part of that is education for the tenants. Part of that is preventative measures you can take in your screening process to make sure that the person that you are renting to is actually the person that is going to be living in the rental apartment. I've had other scenarios play out where it was a twin brother who applied for another brother who was not the actual tenant, but the one brother had good credit and a job, and the other brother did not have good credit and did not have a job. And they used a combination of driver's licenses and social security numbers to prove identity that didn't all match up. And that one was actually quite a doozy to figure out. It took us quite a while. It was very confusing. In fact, we believe that the brothers each came in at different times in the application process to get approved for the rental, and we didn't know that at all. It was impossible for us to have known that. And so there's weird things like that that you will deal with as a landlord. And so there's these things that you need to do to be prepared to try to prevent that from happening. And so the first thing that you need to do to make sure that you're trying to prevent that from happening is, one, you want to make sure that you have a good screening service in place, a good screening option available to you to confirm someone's identity and not just depend on the paperwork that is sitting in front of you, because as we all know, paperwork and documents and IDs can easily be manipulated. And so you want to make sure that you have a good screening software that is available to you to screen tenants adequately. The second thing you want to make sure that you're doing in this process is try not to do screenings for tenants without meeting in person. And I know that's a little bit harder in this whole COVID-19 thing. However, it is one of the key pieces to making sure that the person that is applying for your rental is the actual person who's going to be living there, because you want to be able to put eyes on the person who is going to be in and out of your rental property, so that if you do stop by sometime to check on the property, do a property inspection, your quarterly or whatever it is, you want to know who should be in your rental and who should not be in your rental based on the names on the lease and people that you have confirmed with documentation such as IDs and pay stubs, as well as somebody that you have physically met in person. And so that's the second key piece to that. part of the screening process to make sure that you're getting a quality tenant in there that is who they say they are. The third thing that you want to do is you want to do employer verifications or rental verifications. And what do I mean by that? That means that it's always a good idea. As a landlord, I would always send a quick email or a fax over to whichever address or landlord or property management company that the person listed as their prior rental prior to yours. Sometimes I would do it for as much as two rentals to cover 2 to 4 years prior to them applying for my rental. And I would just send a quick email or a fax or whatever it was, whatever method they preferred, just to get confirmation if they could fill out a renter's verification form, just to confirm that, yes, this person by this name rented on these dates and this was the rent amount and that rent amount matches the amount that they put on their application and so on and so forth. It's just an additional layer of verification to verify that not only did you do a screening on this person and that came back fine, not only did you meet the person and everything seems legit about this person and the ID and documentation they provided you with appears to be accurate, but also see that you confirmed with a prior contact, a prior landlord, a prior property management company that yes, this person has rented from me and all the information they provided you is accurate or at least close enough. Sometimes people get dates and amounts wrong by a little bit. If rent was $1,000, they might have put $975 because there was a $15 fee or something for a pet that they didn't remember or whatever it may be. So, but that's just an added layer of verifying that that person is who they say they are. The other part of this process is when it comes to friends and relatives, it's important that your tenants are aware that and that it's included in your lease that there's a limit on how long somebody can stay at your rental. For instance, it was a good thing that my particular lease at this particular property stated that friends, relatives, anybody who's not named on the lease cannot stay for any longer than 5 consecutive days. Now, this is going to be different in every state and every area, but in my particular area, the lease was allowed to actually stay, I think, as short as 3 days, 3 consecutive days in a 30-day period. So what that means is if you invite a friend or a family member over, that friend or family member is not allowed to stay at your property, at your rental, for any longer than 5 days within a 30-day period, or a 5 consecutive days within a 30-day period, or a total of, and I think ours was something like a total of 10 days or 14 days or something like that. So they could stay for 5 days consecutively, then they had to leave for at least a day or two, then they could come back, and then they could stay for another 3 to 5 days. Obviously, there's little loopholes in the wording in a lot of leases, but in our particular lease, that was the requirement. And this particular tenant, this person was staying in this apartment for much longer than 5 consecutive days at a time, and many, many more days than 10 or 14 or 12 days, whatever it was on that particular lease. And so we were able to file just on that alone, that this person was staying in the rental longer than our lease allowed for friends or family members. And so had we actually gotten to the point where we were going to perform a writ on that particular unit, that was sufficient for us. The lease was sufficient. The judge had already ruled in our favor, but as I said, the tenant ended up passing away prior to the day that we were going to be able to file the writ to take possession of the rental. So it's important to have that verbiage in your lease, and it's important to make sure that you go over that section with your tenants to make sure when they are signing the lease that they understand that, hey, you are the person named on this lease. You cannot just have anybody else staying at this property. And if they do, these are the requirements, and you cannot have people staying longer than this amount of time. So those are a few key points and key things to make sure that you're addressing when it comes to having a tenant at your property that should not be there. And hopefully you've gotten some good information from this. Hopefully you never encounter that scenario. But should you ever encounter it, then you know now what some of the things are that you're going to have to deal with in that process. And so hopefully it's easy for you if you do encounter it, but it's always better to prevent it than have to deal with it after the fact. So if you have any questions, you have any comments, sound off anywhere that you hear this podcast, whether it's our Tenant Cloud YouTube channel or Spotify or any of the places that you might be listening to this podcast, feel free to sound off. You can also learn more about stuff like this at tenantcloud.com/blog. As always, thanks for taking the time to listen to this podcast. I know that you have a busy schedule, so I appreciate every second that you spend here listening to this. Again, I hope you found value in the information that I've been able to share with you today. And feel free to share this with anybody else that you may think might benefit from it. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to talking with you again next time.